Accession number 20302, Reel 2.
Donald Newson, Reel 2.
Most of them were Scotch.
And did you go into a platoon and company here that you remember?
Yes, I went into a company, and it was C Company and number 13 platoon. The company commander was a man called Major Murray.
What was he like as a leader?
He was a career officer. Which meant that he was a good officer, but he wanted to make the army a career, and that being so, he wanted to come out with a distinguished service, such as an award, which he did get.
Did that create any problems for the soldiers?
No, he earned it.
Did he look after the men?
Yes. He always said he'd never send it anywhere where he wouldn't go himself.
How did the Scotch soldiers take to the English incomers?
During the war, very well. But I thought after the war, they would have been happier if you said you come from Scotland rather than England.
What gave you that impression?
Well, I used to go out with them for the evening, and I've never felt completely the same as them. I always felt there was a slight gulf between us, the Scottish and the English. But I had plenty of friends, you know, and it probably was just me, how I felt.
Now, you were telling me about the attacks on Hill 112, I think.
Yes. Said.
Can you go into the details about that as it affected you, please?
Yes, I can. We were dug in on this Hill 112, which was a very, very prominent position. And it was the first time I saw a German plane come over and dive bomb us, because they were very few and far between, German fighter planes at that time. And it came screaming over, and it didn't do a great deal of damage, but the psychological effect was quite a lot, because they had what they call a screaming attachment terms when they dived. But that didn't give us undue trouble. The real trouble was through the mortar bombing from the German side, which we had to put up with consistently and non-stop for 48 hours. I do think now that anyone who was in an infantry regiment and had to man Hill 112 would always have to have hearing problems, because the bombing and mortar shelling was continuous. And I should mention at this stage that we had a padre by the name of Reverend Dunlop. And although the mortar bombs were falling all around, when there was a lull, I can distinctly remember him coming past my slit trench and administering the last rites to the man or men in the next trench to me, which I thought was very brave. He was on the surface. We were all dug in. But we didn't stay there very long, not more than about 48 hours, which was plenty long enough, and then we were relieved by the Seaforth Islanders.
Were you in trenches all the time?
We were, yeah. You couldn't possibly live outside a trench, because the mortar bombing was too heavy.
How deep were the trenches?
The trenches were deep enough to see, to take your rifle and rest on the edge, but if you crouched down, you could get your head below the surface of the ground.
But you dug them yourself?
Pardon?
Had you dug them yourself?
Yes, we had dug them ourselves. Quickly, and under shell fire.
Was it easy ground to dig into?
It was reasonably easy. We used to carry a spade with us, not just entrenching tools. We discarded them, they weren't any good. We all used to carry an ordinary shovel on the back. Spade, I should say.
What was wrong with the entrenching tool?
They weren't big enough to dig. You couldn't get the leverage.
You mean they weren't long enough?
They weren't long enough and they were too small for the job. But we used to put the spade on our backpack, and that used to, the top part of the spade used to be at the back of our neck. And that used to protect you a bit from shrapnel. Not that I ever had a bit touch me, but that was another good place for it to be.
Where did you get these spades from?
We were issued with them from the Pioneer Corps.
And could you get any food and drink whilst you were in the trenches?
Not very much. In fact, I don't think anyone could get near enough to us to bring us anything. In other places, in Normandy, the rations used to be tins of McConaughey steak and kidney pudding and that sort of thing, but the quartermaster sergeant used to bring them up at night time, so we wouldn't be sniped at.
Were you firing back at the enemy from these trenches?
No, because we couldn't, although we were close to the enemy, they were keeping their heads down as well because our shelling was coming over very close. We were very close to them, but that was keeping their heads down as much as their shelling was keeping our heads down. But they never counterattacked, not there.
Was there any question of sleeping in the trench?
Impossible. You'd felt very tired, but to actually sleep was out of the question.
So you didn't sleep for 48 hours?
I would say that would be about it, yes.
Could you relieve yourself?
Well, you couldn't get out of the trench. You wouldn't do anything nasty in the trench, but you could relieve yourself to a certain extent.
So what did you feel like when you finally left them?
Well, we were glad to get out and off that position, and when we was coming out of it, the Germans realised we were getting out, and they were sniping all the time at us.
Why did you have many casualties?
We did have quite a few casualties, yes. But by that time we'd learnt to take cover, and we took every bit of cover we could get.
Did any of the mortar bombs drop into any of the trenches?
I think they did, yes.
But you were unharmed?
I didn't have any drop that close to me in particular, no.
What happened next?
Well, we came out of the line and we had a short rest, as I remember. And we got ready for the next action, which was at a place called Gaumont.
Take me through that, please.
Yes, we had a we knew there was going into action and a big one because we had a church service beforehand. And the padre read the lesson and gave us a sermon. And then the flail tanks went in front of us to try and make a path through to blow up all the anti-personnel mines. And we followed them in and we breached the German lines.
What time of day did you attack?
It was a daylight attack.
Did you advance walking or running?
Walking. Walking most of the time.
Why was that?
Well, we had a lot of infantrymen carry a lot of equipment, including I for myself, I had a Bren gun to carry and magazines, also your own big pack. So running was not a thing you could do very well, unless you had to.
Did you fire as you advanced?
No, we went forward and we took up positions again and held the line until the tanks came through. But I can't actually remember actually firing at anyone in particular.
Were you dodging behind cover all the time?
No, we had a certain amount of cover. There was trees on one side, but the greatest danger was standing on a anti-personnel mine, which there was plenty of.
Did that happen to your comrades?
It did, yeah.
So the flail tanks hadn't...
They hadn't got that far, no. The tanks very, very rarely stayed with us right through the action. Something invariably happened, so they dropped out. They used to lose a track or something like that.
Were you attacking German trenches?
The Germans were dug in, yes. But most of them, I'm glad to say, surrendered to us.
What did the others do?
Some of them fought to the bitter end, but most of them came out with their hands up.
Did any of them run away?
No, they when they give themselves up, that was they reconciled themselves to capture.
How were they treated when they surrendered?
Well, the initial infantry, like myself, didn't harm them. We sent them back, but what happened to them after that, I don't know. We used to point in the direction where we came from to the rear, and that is the way they used to go.
Feel inclined to harm them?
No. I never... I always gave them a chance to give themselves up. I never felt in the least bit inclined to harm them once they had given themselves up.
Why was that?
Common decency.
So you broke through on this day at Gaumont?
Yeah.
And then what?
Well, breaking through at Gaumont was a very important battle that allowed the tanks to go through and to a very famous place, which you probably have heard of, Falaise, and Falaise Gap. That is where a large part of the German army were annihilated by our aircraft, our Typhoons, and rockets and that. When we went through Falaise, there was the fields and sides of the road were littered with dead horses and dead men and cattle, and the stench was unbelievable.
What was your opinion of the German enemy in Normandy?
Well, I always thought they fought well and fair. I never saw anything where they mistreated anyone or they didn't give up easily. But in most cases, they were outgunned.
Had you had much contact with civilians in Normandy?
I had. On one occasion, I formed the opinion that the people in Normandy, in the countryside, didn't want us. Because their land was being destroyed by our shelling and the German shelling. Their cattle was getting killed. Some of the civilians were being killed. Their farmland and their orchards were being dug up by people like me to make a slit trench. In fact, when I was digging in one orchard, a lady who I took to be a farmer's wife ran over to me and said I was worse than the Bosch.
Because of your digging it up?
I think she was generally absolutely fed up with the whole thing, you know. I'm seeing cattle being killed and things like that. Because when we dug trenches in Normandy, we was only occupying for a short time, and then we'd move on. But we'd never fill the trenches in. Someone else would, presumably the people who owned the land would have to do that. So I could understand them not wanting us there.
Did you have any other exchange of words with civilians?
No. I did ask one farmer for some cider once, and he gave me some. He told me not to drink too much because it was very strong. But it wasn't good policy to drink too much cider, because if you did, you'd go to sleep in the trench, and if there was a counterattack came in, you'd be caught in it. So I used to go very gentle on the cider.
Any other memories from Normandy?
Only it was very hot. There was a lot of flies everywhere from the dead cattle and animals. It wasn't a very healthy place. The countryside was lovely, but inhospitable at that time.
What happened next?
After Normandy, we moved. The German army moved out after Falaise, and they took all their belongings with them. They packed their things up with no intention of coming back again. And they went back into mainland Germany. That's the way they were heading anyway. We next went into Belgium, and they made us very, very welcome. In fact, the people come out in the streets with bunches of flowers to give us.
Whereabouts in Belgium was that?
Well, I don't know the exact name, but it was on the borders.
Did you have any conversations with any of them?
Not really. I couldn't really get through to them. I didn't understand their language and they didn't really understand mine. But they made it obvious they were very pleased to see us. And then we moved on to Holland. And they were more reserved and restrained in their welcome. But they were very sincere. And I was billeted at a place called Eindhoven, where the Phillips Works were, and every one of us in the battalion had a bed to sleep in, which the civilian population let us share, you know, with them, their houses. Instead of sleeping outside in slit trenches, they let us into their houses. But they did not give a very good account of the German occupation.
What type of things would they say?
Well, I don't like repeating it, but I have no reason to disbelieve the woman, but she said that when they couldn't find the partisans who were blowing the railway tracks and bridges up, they used to take the partisans' sons and shoot them. And I think the woman, I don't know how often or how many, but I think they did make an example from time to time. As I say, I didn't see it, I didn't witness it, but I don't think the woman would have told me that without good reason.
Any other memories from Eindhoven?
Well, only that the people were very, very short of food, and we used to share our rations with them, and they were very pleased to accept a pack of cigarettes because they didn't seem to have any. And they didn't like being called Dutch, because that used to be confused with Deutsch. So they used to prefer us to call them Hollanders. But yes, they were very nice people and genuine. The only thing with Holland was, when you dug in there as an infantryman, when you dug in, after about 18 inches to 2 foot, you came to water, because it was very low country, and you were standing and almost sleeping in water all the time when you dug in. Around about the end of 1944, we took up positions on the River Maas. The British on one side and the Germans on the other. You could hear them speaking, and every now and again we had orders to open up at them to keep the Bren gun from freezing up, because this was in the middle of the winter, around about Christmas time. And as soon as we used to open up, they used to fire back at us just as hard. They also, at night time, they used to send patrols across the river to the back of our lines. And that was a sort of an ongoing thing. We didn't intercept them, because the sort of observation post I was on, there was only perhaps myself and two other men, three of us, and some of the patrols that used to come over from the German side were quite large. There'd be sort of a platoon of German soldiers. But I know that they kept Old Year's Night or New Year's Day, you can hear the fireworks going off their side of the river, Mars. There was much shouting, and they didn't keep quiet or anything. But that was their way of celebrating the New Year. Actually, I gained the impression that the German soldiers were far more experienced than us to warfare.
Gave you that impression?
Well, they seem to accept it more.
How do you mean there's interactive?
Well, they they just seemed as though they were far more experienced soldiers than what we were. As though they'd, in fact, they said that when we did take a few prisoners, they said the biggest punishment what they could get was to be sent from our sector to the Russian sector, because that's so much worse. But they weren't all real brave or courageous sort of men. They were just the same as us, really. And on one night attack in going through Holland, our position got too far ahead. And we overran the German positions, and the shelling from our side came over, and I jumped into a trench, and that was still occupied by a German. And he gave himself up to me. He gave me his bayonet and his rifle and his belt, and I sent him back to the lines, and I think he's somewhat pleased to be out of it.
What made you think that?
Well, I think by that time in the war, a lot of German soldiers, they did fight hard in Germany itself, but by that stage of the war, they were beginning to realise that they were fighting a losing battle. But in Germany itself, I thought the resistance stiffened. They seemed to realise that they were on their home ground, and they didn't give up anything.
But what happened to you between December and March, when presumably you went into Germany?
When we went into Germany, I went into Germany through a place called Kranenburg, which was on the borders. But before I could get to Kranenburg, my company had the job of attacking this town. But we were confronted by a minefield. And the commanding officer of the company stopped us, and he rang back for orders as what to do. And the orders came back for us to continue through the minefield. And we went through in an open formation. I think it was very much a wrong decision telling us to go through, because men were blowing up either side of me, and they were coming back minus their legs, coming down. They were blowing up and lost their legs and the arms. But I don't know how, but I was lucky I walked through. And most of the company were following behind me. Including the company commander.
Was this daylight or night?
Daylight.
Was it possible to see where the mines were?
No, impossible. You just didn't know, actually, the next step you took, whether you were going to get blown to smithereens. In fact, when I did get to our objective, the Germans gave themselves up. And we told them to go back the way we'd come, and they wouldn't go. They said they wouldn't go through a minefield. But I think our commanding officer made them go through.
Did they get blown up?